Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with returning guest Dr. Ilya Sandra Perlingeri about her recent article, America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots. We also talk with the leader of the Lakota Strongheart Warrior Society, who helped get the Lakota Truth Tour on the road, a delegation made up of tribal elders that set out on a 12-city speaking tour to bring awareness to actions of genocide against the Lakota people. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. Test gas attack is coming to the subway, this time with fair notice. You may have seen a sign, listeners, in the subway reading that the NYPD will release small amounts of harmless, colorless gas in 5 boroughs and 21 subway lines. It describes it as a test to help the police department to be ready for a terrorist attack. MTA customers are advised to stay calm. They're trying to determine how quickly could airborne poison spread if the subways and trains were used to disperse it. It's a study that will try to find out with a tracer gas in the perfluorocarbon family. Here's another article. NYPD will release colorless, odorless, benign gas in the subway to test attacks. From Rob Weil. Again, it says that the NYPD, in concert with the Department of Energy's Brookhaven National Lab, will release benign gas through the NYC subway system in July to test out how a chemical or biological weapons attack would spread, according to a release. About 200 sampling devices will be deployed to examine how low concentrations of harmless gases known as perfluorocarbons get dispersed in the country's busiest public transport system. Here's a description of that gas, known as PFTs. According to this report, present no health or environmental hazard. They are non-toxic, inert, odorless, and invisible. Have been used in airflow studies since the 1980s, including a 2005 urban dispersion program conducted in Manhattan. Listeners might remember that. It was in Midtown. Paul Kalb, division head for the Environmental Research and Technology in the Environmental Sciences Department at Brookhaven National Laboratory, has said, "The subways play a major role in how air moves through Manhattan and the 5 boroughs." Mr. Kalb said, "If you're in the subways and there's something released on the surface, you could be vulnerable." In the same way, he said, a gas released in the subway could affect people in a different part of the city. Wanting to know more, the police department commissioned the laboratory, which is on Long Island, to conduct the more extensive 2-year study at a cost of $3.4 million. And Mr. Kalb said the money came from a federal grant the police received from the Department of Homeland Security. Quote, "The NYPD works for the best, but plans for the worst when it comes to potential catastrophic attacks, such as ones employing radiological contaminants or weaponized anthrax." That's from the police commissioner. "This field study with Brookhaven's outstanding expertise will help prepare and safeguard the city's population in the event of an actual attack." Mr. Kalb said his colleagues plan to enlist about 100 college students as interns to help set up the test and gather air samples to be analyzed. He said that they would install small black and gray boxes containing monitoring equipment on subway platforms and lamp posts poles around the city. Then the traceable gases will be released in 7 different locations, 3 above ground and 4 below, on 3 non-consecutive days in July. The results will be tracked by researchers from Brookhaven, the Argonne National Laboratory, and the Los Alamos National Laboratory. To minimize fear, each release will be announced to the public a day in advance, and the boxes will show a phone number and a website people can contact for more information. Obviously, we're not getting told the full story. As listeners know, with false flag attacks, a drill or a test is going on of the same nature of the exact terrorist attack that occurs. And here's Mr. Kolb saying, "We're a little bit concerned that people are going to be nervous, especially after what happened in Boston. Clearly, people are trained to say something if they see something." Well, has the CIA and the U.S. Army or any military tested biological agents on civilians? Well, the Army has acknowledged that between 1949 and 1969, 239 populated areas from coast to coast were blanketed with various organisms during tests designed to measure patterns of dissemination in the air, weather effects, dosages, optimum placement of the source, and other factors. Testing over such areas was supposedly suspended after 1969, but there's no way to be certain of this. In any event, open-air spraying continued at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. In 1950, the Army used aircraft and homing pigeons to drop turkey feathers dusted with cereal rust spores to contaminate oat crops to prove that a cereal rust epidemic could be spread as a biological warfare weapon. San Francisco Bay Area, September 20th, 1950. Six experimental biological warfare attacks by the U.S. Army from a ship using Bacillus globigi and Serratia marcescens. At one point, forming a cloud about 2 miles long as the ship traveled slowly along the shoreline of the bay. One of the stated objectives of the exercise was to study the offensive possibilities of attacking a seaport city with biological warfare aerosol from offshore. Okay, beginning on September 29th, patients at Stanford University's hospital in San Francisco were found to be infected by Serratia marcescens. This type of infection had never before been reported at the hospital. 11 patients became infected and one died. According to a report submitted to a Senate committee by a professor of microbiology at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, an increase in the number of Serratia marcescens can cause disease in a healthy person and serious disease in sick people. In 1953 in Minneapolis, 61 releases of zinc cadmium sulfide in 4 sections of the city involving massive exposure of people at home and children in school. The substance was later described by the EPA as, quote, potentially hazardous because of its cadmium content. And former Army scientist writing in the professional journal Atmosphere Environment in 1972 said, "The cadmium compounds, including zinc cadmium sulfide, are highly toxic, and the use of them in open atmospheric experiments presents a human health hazard." He stated that the symptoms produced by the exposure to zinc cadmium sulfide include lung damage, acute kidney inflammation, and fatty degeneration of the liver. Savannah, Georgia, and Avon Park, Florida. The Army, wishing to test the practicality of employing Aedes aegypti mosquitoes to carry a biological warfare agent, released over wide areas hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of this mosquito, which had been a carrier of the yellow fever and dengue fever, both highly dangerous diseases. In New York City, February 11th through the 15th, 1956, a CIA Army team sprayed New York streets in the Holland and Lincoln tunnels using trick suitcases and a car with a dual muffler. June 6, 1966, the Army report of this test was called "A Study of the Vulnerability of Subway Passengers in New York City to Covert Attack with Biological Agents." Trillions of Bacillus subtilis, variant Niger, were released into the subway system during rush hours. One method was to use light bulbs filled with bacteria. These were unobtrusively scattered at a sidewalk level in the subway ventilating grills or tossed onto the roadbeds inside the stations. Aerosol clouds were momentarily visible after a release of bacteria from the light bulbs. The report noted that when the cloud engulfed people, they brushed their clothing, looking up at the grating apron, and walked on. The wind of passing trains spread the bacteria along the tracks. In the time it took for 2 trains to pass, the bacteria were spread from 15th Street to 58th Street. It will never be known how many people later became ill from being unsuspected guinea pigs, for the U.S. Army exhibited not the slightest interest in this question. Well, listeners, some of the articles that were warning us about this new test of airflow had referenced this test in 1966, and here's how they framed it. I think either the New York Times had done this. "And secretly dropped light bulbs loaded with what they regarded as harmless bacteria onto the tracks." So you see the lie and half-truth. In Chicago in the 1960s, the Chicago subway system was a scene of a similar Army experiment. Stockyards, November 1964. The Army conducted aerosol tests over stockyards in Texas, Missouri, Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Nebraska using anti-animal non-biological simulants. It's not clear why stockyards were chosen or what effect this might have had upon the meat consumed by the public. So as many listeners know, if we are in a constant war and there is no specific battlefield, then this is a battlefield and civilians are legitimate targets in war. And another thing that we often talk about on this show is geoengineering, which is the aerosol operations. And if you're listening to this show and you know what I'm talking about, you've seen the aerosol release from these aircraft over dense populated areas. That is something not to get used to because that is what biological warfare looks like. As we talked about last week, listeners, by the public not speaking out against this, it is taken as a consent. In April of this year, Lakota elder Darlene Pipeboy joined us to talk about the Lakota March on the UN, bringing awareness to the systematic elimination of ownership of land and forced integration out of their culture. In violation of the Indian Child Welfare Act, some 740 Lakota children were taken from their families and tribes annually. These complaints and complaints of genocide were brought to the United Nations with intent to file. We're joined by Chinupa Gluhamani, a leader of the Lakota Strong Heart Warrior Society, who took the lead, bringing the complaints to the UN. Chinupa, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
You're with the Lakota Strong Heart Warrior Society, and you were primarily responsible for bringing the issue of kidnapping Lakota children to the United Nations and the legal complaint. Can you give us a background of how you did that and its significance right now?
Well, first of all, this was an ongoing fight that a lot of the tribal people have been facing against, you know, the state of South Dakota and, you know, the tribal governments not living up to the responsibilities when federal funding are distributed for reservations to try to improve, you know, the conditions pertaining to the membership of the said reservation. And the complaint that we brought forth was consisted of how our elders in particular were being abused and how our children were being removed illegally at the hands of DSS and CPS without a full-fledged investigation to have that type of, you know, beneficiary to look at the matters that would safeguard the children, you know, by, you know, not having them separated from a family that was, you know, under any type of circumstance. So the bottom line is a lot of these entities, you know, within the state's pronunciation, whether it's, you know, the agencies like CPS and DSS and even the tribes OnTrack and this Lowell Services, they have always undermined children. It's no different than a tribal government always undermining the said elders. And so we took this case on June 13th and presented it to the High Commissioners on Human Rights to take a strong look and put their emphasis where it's needed to protect the said governing body of the Lakota people on the said reservations within the state of South Dakota. Now, throughout the course of history, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Nebraska has always practiced and perfected colonial policies against indigenous people. And they've always started with elders and children. And this, you know, illegal removal of our grandparents being placed in you know, all these manors off the reservation and our children being placed in these non-native foster care families, you will see the evidence that when a child is being, you know, tormented at that type of, you know, genocidal warfare, our children cannot reconnect with their traditional value system. The same with our elders. When our elders are in those nursing homes or any said manner within the boundary of a said reservation, our elders die because of loneliness, because families don't want to pick up their basic necessities and meet the criteria they once had as a value system. So therefore, our children die, and our grandparents die, and we lose large amounts of tradition when said elders travel back to the spirit world when they're welcomed within the Star Nation. America has to be held accountable within all these states that I just mentioned, South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, and Nebraska.
Going forward to monitor the complaints and the issues, I understand there's going to be a person from the United Nations traveling to South Dakota to take a look around.
Yes. A young lady decided to take this understanding very seriously because a year ago, back in April in 2012, a special rapporteur came through the state of South Dakota and numerous other states. I think his last stop was in Arizona. But he did give credence to the Lakota people, but it was at the discretion of the Spotted Tail Community College. And therefore, a majority of our people were trying to get on board to meet with Mr. James Anaya. I was there. I met the guy, but briefly, he couldn't take the understanding to meet with our said grandmothers that had a large capacity of evidence because they were being subjugated to this abuse called elder abuse in this country. And so we tried so hard and so endlessly to get this voice out there. And people, you know, badmouthed us, they cut us down, they start saying that we didn't have the power of the elders to do this, when in fact our elders still encourage us to keep moving. And I'm talking about Bernice Whitehawk, Wilma Thinelk, Marie Randall, Cecilia Martin. You know, these grandmothers that stayed the course, Enoch and Della Brinksplenty, Wilson Crow and his wife Ella Coleman, they've been staying on this, and Elizabeth Youngbear. These families and grandmothers have kept pushing us continuously. Angel and Henry Belt, a grandmother and grandfather that are raising their children in a unhealthy a trailer home where they don't even have electricity. The tribal council cut their electricity. Nothing, man, has ever been replaced to give them any type of suitable condition where they can live in a civil, you know, housing, you know. And this is the things that happen. So we wanted the United Nations to take a real look and come inside and do their homework. And then take all this to the world courts and start holding them. If I remember correctly, the Soviet Union, better known as Russia, has filed a complaint against America for all these unhealthy atrocities and directed all their attention about the conditions on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. As if you know the history with Russia, Russia has never, ever deprived their indigenous people of their rights to their own capacity of freedom. And I'm talking about the Mongols. The Mongols still live traditionally in their homeland in the country of Russia. And America should be doing that by giving indigenous people their ability to serve themselves independently. But we are under the yoke of slavery at the hands of the federal government that continue to deprive our rights away to live a free and independent life.
Some of the injunctions that you would want as a result of these legal complaints is to have the Lakota children return back to their families. How do you see that happening?
Well, first of all, 3 weeks ago, there was a big ICWA summit in the vicinity of Rapid City, South Dakota, better known as Benenden County. And a number of tribal nations and tribal chair people attended that. I was in attendance because, you know, the rights of our indigenous people being subjugated to that. But let's just make a long story very, very strong and short. All these tribal entities that have programs to safeguard our tribal children have never, ever met those requirements as an exacting standard. Pedro and Cassandra Semitol had their children removed illegally. They said there was evidence of abuse going on in the house. Justin Cooper and this gentleman by the name of Amiat, they investigated this family and this couple, and they found no evidence of abuse. So the Lola program took these children and still are keeping them in foster care. And now these kids, you see, the brainwash of how, you know, foster care families intricate. It's lifestyle. They condemn our children. Ain't nowhere in America, even in American citizenship, do they know about love to protect the identity and the traditions of said children in Indian country. I know this because I'm a prime example of how that abuse becomes evident. Gentleman by the name of Barry Little Eagle. Barry Little Eagle was adopted out. He became a truck driver. And he's still trying to connect his roots with his family. And he was removed from the Standing Rock Reservation. And there are many other cases like this that go on. But these programs have proved the failure of how America implements policies and procedures. Nowhere in America's said Indian reservation should our people have to go through that type of colonial enforcement where it deprives our children and our elders to return brought back to a healthy family. And this is where South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming, and Montana, their states need to be held accountable for all this illegal genocide that's going on. And I want these children to return home. I want these grandmothers to be returning home to the healthy manners that our tribes can implement all these healthy, you know, predicaments that can safeguard them. Our people are dying every second, every moment, every hour, every day, every year, month, you name it. And 10 to 1, they're all children and elderly. And that's how you make the long story short.
Chinupa Gluhamani, leader of the Lakota Strongheart Warrior Society, thank you so much for being on In Other News and bringing awareness to this critical, critical issue.
Thank you.
We welcome back environmental writer and author Dr. Ilyasandra Perlingeri. She's written many articles about the poisons in our environment, including electromagnetics and microwave radiation. Her latest article, titled America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots, calls for a nationwide general strike on the weekend of July 4th, 2013. She's a former university professor and scholar and author of the book The Uterine Crisis, and that book compiles 15 years of independent research linking women's serious reproductive illnesses with environmental toxins. The London's Ecologist magazine called it an inspiration. All of these topics discussed on In Other News fit together: Agenda 21, geoengineering, genetically modified food, microwave technology, nanotechnology. Dr. Perlingeri joins us now to discuss her cross-disciplinary approach in these fields. Dr. Perlingeri, welcome back to In Other News.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back, Jeff.
Well, you wrote a four-part article titled America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots. Tell listeners what's that about.
Well, so far, as of today, only three of them have been published, and I'm hoping by the end of this week the fourth one will be Lessons That You Didn't Learn in School. That's part four. As I have said on previous In Other News programs, a lot of the health problems that we have today, not just in the United States but all over the world, are mostly invisible, and part of that is the technology behind it, nanotechnology in the aerosol chemtrails, and in fact nanotechnology in some of the vaccines, and a mostly uninformed public that does not really understand that this is a far bigger picture of harm. And as I have told my readers and friends for a long time, I have no hidden agendas. I just want everybody well and safe. However, governments and a lot of agencies have some very dark agendas of harm, and it's about time that all of this stopped. So these three parts that I have written so far that are actually going viral, and they're going to be posted, I know, on New York Skywatch, are not all of the problems, because the problems are massive, but some of the main problems that we are facing now that are impacting our health tremendously. So in the first part, which was written several weeks ago, the beginning of June, I wanted to look at some nanotechnology, since we have nanofiber coated aluminum in the aerosols, but there's a much bigger picture of nanotechnology. It's unregulated.
Unregulated, you're right.
It's totally unregulated. We don't even actually know how many items have nanotech in them. We know that there are cosmetics. There's an estimated approximately 1,000 products, but we don't exactly know the number. As I just said, and you agreed, it's unregulated and untested either for short or long-term dangers. But they're found in cosmetics, including sunscreens and anti-aging creams, in medicine, in electronics, in clothing, some of them to make clothes very lightweight, in paints, in coatings, even in scratch-resistant car bumpers. And most of this is not even in any mainstream news, although there are many, many different nanotech websites to keep people in the loop who are part of that. And I mentioned in my first article that a retired professor from San Francisco State has compiled a website linking all the nano health dangers, because we just really don't know how massive the problems might be, although there is a considerable amount of research saying that this could be worse than asbestos and cigarettes combined. As I said, we don't know.
I wonder if different countries regulate the nanotechnology differently than others.
I can't say exactly, but I do know from talking to some scientists in Europe that it's not regulated there either. So this is somewhat off the scale and a serious invisible problem. I'll give you an example. My granddaughter, who just turned 5, she's been very sick for the... I normally don't talk about personal stuff, but I feel this is very, very relevant. So she's just turned 5, and last year when she was 4, I was very, very concerned about her health because, and as you know, I've been calling for everybody to get tested for heavy metals because we've got heavy metals in the aerosols and we've got heavy metals in pesticides, and it goes on and on. At any rate, one of the products that has nanotechnology or sunscreens, titanium dioxide is one of the ingredients, which is a poison. It's used very, very frequently by adults and children, and people slather it all over their skins, but it's toxic. And I had her tested for heavy metals, and it was a big, big shock for me to see that titanium dioxide, and the only place we knew that she was getting this was from the sunscreen. I can't even begin to tell you how worried I am, because I knew that it was in a lot of cosmetics, though I have yet to see an ingredient listed, any nanotech ingredients, but it's general knowledge, even in the nanotech journals, that cosmetics are one of the big things.
We're speaking with Dr. Ilya Sandra Perlingeri about her four-part article, America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots. We'll be right back after this break. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Ilya Sandra Perlingeri. She's an environmental writer and author. She has recently written the four-part article, America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots. Is there a direct correlation with the ingredient in sunscreen and her condition?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there was no other way that she would have been getting titanium dioxide in overload because it was really off the scale.
It was absorbed through her skin.
It absorbed. The skin is the largest organ in the body, and it has a permeable membrane. That means that water goes through it, fog goes through it, chemicals go through it, cosmetic products go through it. It can be absorbed in all these toxic chemicals to which we're exposed. I mean, we're really, in a sense, in a soup of this, a very toxic soup.
But you could run around and go shopping and go to work and be in your office and get out and get in your car and go home and not really see what you've pointed out here in your article titled America's Invisible Crises.
This is true, but here's the thing, Jeff. We have staggering rates of health problems, of illnesses that we never used to have. And this goes for the children most especially. When I was growing up in New York City, there was no such a thing as a children's hospital. And now they're all over. There are hundreds and hundreds of children's hospitals, most of them relating to cancer. The cancer rate in children is off the scale. And that's just one example. Even for people who don't have a clue, in a sense, they know that something is wrong because people are sick all over. In this past week, even in my circle of friends, last Monday, a dear friend of mine went in for uterine surgery, and I've been writing about this, you know, for years. They found an aggressive cancer in her uterus, and she had a complete hysterectomy. That's one, and this coming tomorrow, in fact, Tuesday, another friend of mine is going in for breast removal for breast cancer. When I was growing up decades ago, one in about 45 people in the United States got cancer, and today it's one in two. That's 50% of the population. We have vaccines that have toxic chemicals in them. We have a food supply that is loaded with very, very toxic pesticides, and including Monsanto and all of the agri companies that are poisoning the soil. So we've got this toxicity going through the entire web of life, and we're at the top of the food chain. And it's not a healthy food chain. And I want this fixed, as I have been saying for a very long time. And now I believe that we have an opportunity to look at some of these problems with nanotechnology, with the EMF spectrum. This is another thing. I mean, everybody, almost there's 6.5 billion cell phones around the world. It's unsafe technology. And the EMF spectrum, that's the electromagnetic field spectrum, is very toxic. I just was speaking to Professor Ole Johansson, probably the world's leading authority on the dangers of this invisible spectrum. And he says for the first time in our history, global history, that we are exposed to this pulsing, damaging energy, which is invisible on a 24/7 scenario all the time now, which we never had before. And a two-minute cell phone conversation goes through the blood, the pulsing goes through the blood-brain barrier and causes cell death in the brain just with 2 minutes on the phone.
Our past guest, Amy Worthington, who had done mountains of research in this, had pointed out that when you put a cell phone up to your ear, it vibrates
right.
The cells, billions of cycles per second,
right.
And the DNA
right.
starts to spill
and
up.
Amy Worthington has been writing about this that I know of at least 12, 14 years. There is enough medical evidence that this is a very unsafe technology. But safety has never been a concern of the big companies. The multinational companies now, as I just wrote in one of my articles, 147 multinational companies, basically corporations, run the planet. The governments are an aside. They're being told what to do from this very, very dark agenda of harm. And the bottom line for any corporation is profit. and we are all expendable for their corporate profits. And even for people who haven't connected the dots yet, people know that the financial system is in the trash can, and that the American dollar, which is probably worth about 2 cents, even if that, is not doing anything to help. We are in grave trouble financially, politically, in terms of our health, and in terms of education, certainly dumbed down.
And you've pointed out in your four-part series, America's Invisible Crises, Connecting the Dots. We were talking about the wireless microwave radiation. Talk about smart meters you listed in your article.
I think smart meters are an Orwellian scam, smart being the Orwellian term. It's just the opposite. They're poison meters for a number of reasons. First of all, there's money involved again, the greed. There's billions of dollars around the world supposedly to update the grid, the energy grid, so that it's more high-tech and modern. What this actually translates into is a sort of an Orwellian scenario where anybody who has a smart meter on their house or in their apartment or in an office, the companies, first of all, have never told us, any of us, in any of their paperwork or letting people know that they even had their analog meter replaced with a so-called smart meter. They never told them that there were dangers involved. And the dangers are, again, just as you were mentioning with Amy Worthington, this is a pulsing scenario on the EMF scale that is. So first we have, with these meters, no informed consent to be harmed. And there's already an enormous amount of information available that people are being harmed by this pulsing in the body from anywhere from 1 foot away to even 20 or 30 feet away. So it doesn't matter, in a sense, where you put it on a house. It's still harm. And I will tell you that my wonderful cat, Ebony, was zapped last year when I was staying with friends. And I had Ebony tested for heavy metals, and in fact, a number of my friends are doing this now, because heavy metals poisoning is not just for humans. And Ebony died last year after he got zapped with a smart meter. They're not safe. I know an awful lot of people who are very sick from this. So it's an unsafe technology. The corporations never have told us how unsafe and how dangerous it is.
There's an article that just shows how aggressive this is, and it's around the world. The UK introduces obligatory smart metering via backdoor. In a stunning and outrageous government U-turn, ministers have decided that from the end of the year, UK energy suppliers will be blocked from fulfilling customer wishes to replace a pre-existing smart meter with a more safe and secure analog alternative. This article actually says with a more safe and secure analog alternative.
Right. This is, to me, part of this multi-pronged approach of massive harm. One, it's all about greed, because they're making, you know, billions of dollars, and they have negotiated with governments all over the world to upgrade the grid without any public discussion about the dangers. And yes, there are people speaking out. When I first started writing articles about the smart meters almost 3 years ago, nobody even knew what they were. It's such a dangerous technology, but it's also an invasion of privacy, because this is a way of the energy companies to track, supposedly, to keep the grid working smoothly, but basically to track energy use in a person's house or apartment. That means that they know when you're not home, and there have already been break-ins with theft. There have been fires related to this, and there are wonderful smart meter organizations, nonprofits all over the United States, in Europe, in Canada, because people are speaking out. The problem is that we don't have this long period of time anymore to be discussing this for years and years and years while people are getting zapped. children are extremely vulnerable to this this EMF spectrum. We have to put a stop to it.
The data that's collected from these smart meters could be sold to third parties. That's what we see again and again. So you have corporations who are collecting this data, and I bet a lot of the that work is outsourced from the utility company. I'm not certain, but it usually does involve third-party private corporations who are handling the personal, in quote, private data of individuals or families and their energy use.
There's another interesting and I think very dangerous aspect of this, given the financial collapse that we're in right now, not just in the United States, but all over. There have been a number of discussions. The rigging of the meter system so that these smart meters or these poison meters can monitor what's going on in a person's house or apartment. And the plan is down the road, meaning that they can connect and see what your stove usage is or your electricity usage is or whatever in terms of the energy grid. And the plan is down the road of that it's going to disable any of the electrical products that a person has in a house, supposedly to upgrade the grid so that people are not, let's say, within 12 months or so, not going to be able to use coffee makers to washing machines and everything in between, and they're going to have to upgrade everything, and people are not going to be able to afford doing that. There are all these undercurrent, what I consider very nefarious scenarios of harm and of breaking down the financial scenario even worse than it already is. This is not what a democracy is all about, and we're not living in one anymore. You know, the policemen, when I was growing up, they had their cute little caps and a nightstick. They never carried guns. Now people are pulled over when they're driving for no reason and beaten or tasered, and those things are totally dangerous. This is a police scenario. We are not living in a peaceful society. We are not living in democracy. We are living in a violent scenario that is getting worse and worse with all the lies attendant to that in mainstream media.
That's right. Our guest, Dr. Ilya Sandra Perlingeri, former university professor and scholar and author of the book, The Uterine Crisis. One of the other topics that you write about in your article, titled America's Invisible Crises, Connecting Dots, are the aerosol operations. And you've been having quite a bit of activity out where you're at in Southern California.
That's true, but it seems from talking to you and a number of other people up and down the eastern seaboard, really all the way up to Canada, that it's not just isolated here. I will tell you that from the research just since the early part of the year, the aerosol crimes, as Clifford Carnicom calls them, have increased tremendously. Sometime after the end of January, early February. So this is what I'm seeing, an increase in the degradation of the environment as well as a lot of illness. Upper respiratory illnesses are really off the scale now. I did an article in April on just the air pollution in Los Angeles. Now, Los Angeles has had air pollution for a very long time, decades, but it's now gotten so out of hand. The medical evidence is very, very significant because there's increases in asthma for children, and all sorts of upper respiratory problems and cardiovascular problems, which weren't as significant as they are now. So, from talking to several doctors on the East Coast, there's a parallel going on in New England going down to Virginia. The aerosol operation has, in certain places, the chemical composition of the poisons has increased. there are more desiccants in it, and that is playing out by looking at plant life. In my own garden, by talking to people all over the country, the desiccants, this is drying out of the plants. And we had a fog come in to Southern California on one instance where it came in within a half an hour. My garden, my lilacs, my beautiful white and lavender lilacs and the hydrangeas, which were blooming one day in less than 24 hours, were dead. Overnight burned. And this has happened on several occasions. I've had talks with people who are organic gardeners who are seeing this in Maine, in Massachusetts, and upstate New York. And you can feel it also in what you're breathing. We're not breathing, as Clifford Carnicom has said, oxygen anymore in any of the amount that it used to be. We're breathing plasma because of the HARP scenario. And one of the other metals that we know are in the aerosols that weren't previously are lithium. Lithium is an inorganic compound, and it's been used very widely as a drug for the treatment of manic and bipolar disorders. But when you amp up the lithium, which we never used to have, to the best of my knowledge from the testing that I've done and talking to several other scientists, when you amp that up, people who are on the medication are really having a very difficult time. I spoke to one doctor in San Diego whose patients have been on it, and she couldn't figure out what was going on until we started doing this connecting the dots, going across the disciplines to see that people who were on this as a drug, while they're spraying this, so they're getting a massive overdose. So they've changed things, and I believe they've been amping things up very, very considerably for more harm. And until there's any real public discussion and accountability to these criminals, we're all at grave risk. Just even in the past few days, they were spraying. I've never seen the sky like this, and I look at the sky all the time and am in touch with some of the top researchers pretty much all the time. I have never seen these artificial geoengineered. They're not clouds. They're poisons. Clifford has, Carnicom has done a massive amount of research showing that what's up in the sky comes down and goes into the whole web of life. So we have to put a stop to this. And I am calling, this is the fourth year in a row that I am calling for a nationwide general strike over the 4th of July holiday. And I'm asking everybody just to go home. Tank up your car if you drive and make sure that it's topped off with gasoline until we have a safer technology, which I believe is going to come pretty soon, and make sure you have enough food in the house, and then use these 4 days if you can at all stay at home. I'm looking at this as a peaceful endeavor to use it as a time to become better informed, become better educated about connecting all these dots across the disciplines. And that's a big issue in terms of education, because we grow up and every discipline, mathematics, science, music, art, they're all separate and very few people talk across the disciplines. Carmen Bolter, whom you've had on a number of times, is one of the excellent scholars with this, because she's looking across the disciplines and looking at a new way of understanding the history of ancient Egypt. So I'm asking everybody to look across the disciplines. I'm asking everybody to get tested for heavy metals. There isn't anybody I know, even if you don't think you've got it. We're all breathing an assortment of very, very toxic chemicals, hormone disruptors. The hormone disruptors are one of the big reasons for the obesity epidemic that we have. Yes, it's fast food, of course, but the big underlying trouble with the obesity crisis is really a hormone disruptor that is now going from one generation to the other. And we need, one, to become informed. Two, we need to get tested for heavy metals for anybody who can afford to do it. It can be done anonymously so that we have a person's gender, and age and city, and we don't need really much more than that. I want everybody to learn about the three P's, something that I've been talking about for quite a while. The three P's are, first, precaution. If you're not certain about anything, don't do it. And that really goes for all of the harm that is being done to us. We are uninformed guinea pigs. So the corporations have to be held accountable because there's no precaution. The second thing is prevention. You know, we need just to stop, not do things that are going to harm us. If we're uncertain about anything, don't use it. That's what prevention is all about, and not to support any of the companies that are harming us. And the third thing is the collective power of the purse. And I'm spelling purse P-U-R, and instead of an S, is a dollar sign. And I keep saying the buck stops at the cash register. We have to make informed decisions and not shop on automatic pilot, because there are so many harmful ingredients in most of the food. I would say probably 80% of the food today on the shelves is unsafe to eat because it's got aspartame in it or synthetic sugars, which cause brain damage, heavy metals from pesticides. It's on and on and on. So we don't have to support any company that's making poisonous products. Read the labels. Don't buy GMOs. We don't need to have any of the artificial sweeteners, which actually cause brain damage, from the research that Dr. Russell Blaylock has been writing about for decades. He's a board-certified neurosurgeon. Don't buy chemical products that are harmful, and stay with basics. Organics, even though we really don't have organics, I'm just saying use something that is safer. Cook from scratch. Don't use processed foods. Get tested for heavy metals, toxicity. Think about our children, our grandchildren. Think about how badly damaged Gaia is, our Mother Earth. We have no place to go, Jeff. Maybe we'll have Star Trek technology someplace down the pike, but right now this is our home, and we are treating it like a garbage pail or a toilet, because this is the culture of violence and out-of-control harm that is instilled in us through the media, really, from our earliest years. I would say in the last year, millions more people are becoming informed and connecting the dots and realizing that the facade, this Orwellian facade that we have not only here in America, it's not the United States, because our Constitution was trashed in 1871 by the Act of 1871, and that will be in Part 4. Things have been done by stealth for harm, for the greed and the profit of a very small group of people, whether you want to call them the New World. I call it the New World Disorder. It's not order in any way, shape, or form, or the Cabal or the Illuminati. These are very, very wealthy people going back with a history of not just decades but centuries. And there, it's a small group, and there's more of us. And this is why I am saying they want to bank on harm, on continued harm, and I'm just saying, just go home. What are they going to do, knock on everybody's door? They don't have it. They don't have that kind of force. And I just want us to show that we can change the whole paradigm. We're working right now, my whole life, your whole life, all of our lives for decades, on a paradigm based in fear and harm and violence that's totally out of control. You know, there was a great song in South Pacific, Roger and Hammerstein's wonderful musical that came out right after World War II. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. The new paradigm is not one of hate and fear. The new paradigm is love, because I believe that love is the most potent, most wonderful thing that we can do. When we help one another out, it's out of our hearts. So we have to look that we have this capability of creating a wonderful new society based in all of the highest consciousness that we can muster and create. And we haven't learned very much of that as Americans. But in India, that's part of it. You go towards a higher consciousness. You look deep in yourself so that you're not shopping until you drop. That's a corporate ethos for their profit, not for our well-being. So I want a paradigm shift, and I think we have the capabilities of doing it because there is so much waking up in the world. That's what all of these strikes are all over the world, and we've never had one here in America, and it's about time. But I'm not asking for anybody to go out and be in the streets to be beaten up. I'm a peaceful person. I'm following in Mahatma Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King's spaces and direction. We just can do this peacefully, and that's why I'm saying just go home. And next week, at the end of the week, there'll be an article on what we didn't learn in school. We have to become informed so that we can be informed citizens and put a stop to this very, very long nightmare so that we're all safe and well and that we have a new direction of peace and compassion and love and kindness, all the highest things for the highest good.
Dr. Perlingeri, thank you so much. Give us those dates again for the general strike.
July 4th through 7th, so it's a week from this coming Thursday. And for people who can stay home for 4 days, don't buy anything where you have to spend local, state, or federal taxes. Support your local stores and your farmers markets, your organic farmers markets. Don't shop at big box stores. Don't spend money where you have to pay taxes, any kind of taxes, because we're getting absolutely shafted with all of the taxes. And it's all bogus anyway.
Dr. Perlingeri, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show, a former university professor and scholar and author of the book, The Uterine Crisis. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Thanks again for supporting this wonderful station.
Before Messiah's pointed to the door, no one had the guts to leave.